and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 20, 2020. South Sudan introduces voluntary testing for COVID-19.
It is important that the voluntary testing is increased and is done so that we really get to know our status in the country as to where are we in terms of COVID-19.
And an unknown number of people are killed in intercommunal violence in Darfur.
The wounded individual are currently in the hospital. Some of them are in the intensive care unit, and some are still in the outpatient department, while others have been taken to other wards for follow-up treatment.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Health officials in South Sudan have introduced voluntary testing for COVID-19 in Juba to help residents of the town to know their status in order to prevent the spread of the virus. The spokesperson at South Sudan's National Health Ministry says the voluntary testing service is critical because many people in the country are not adhering to the COVID-19 preventive measures. Health officials say they will target 200 volunteers for testings per day. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
South Sudan Health Ministry spokesperson Dr. Toy Loy says the National Public Health Laboratory will be offering up to 100 pre-tests per day to those exhibiting no symptoms and another 100 tests per day for those that are showing symptoms of COVID-19.
It is important that the voluntary testing is increased and is done so that we really get to know our status in the country as to where are we in terms of COVID-19.
Dr. Loy says South Sudan is registering a very small number of cases on a daily basis, but people are not adhering to protective measures advised by health experts, which could soon lead to an upward trend in COVID cases in South Sudan.
Elsewhere, we are seeing upsurge of cases of COVID-19. Next door in Kenya, the number of cases is increasing. I believe also in the West, in the US, in the UK, we are seeing increased cases of COVID-19. So we simply at this stage, we cannot say the fact that we are seeing less positive cases in the Republic of South Sudan does not necessarily mean that the virus is not here.
People cannot afford to be complacent about the coronavirus, says Dr. Loy.
You can be symptom-free without any symptoms of the virus, but you still carry the virus. Majority, 80-85%. So it is. That's why we are saying, okay, you do the voluntary testing so that people know their status. And when you know your status and you carry a virus, then you isolate yourself. That will help isolate, preventing you from giving the virus to other people.
Angelo Gupton, the Chief of Operations for COVID-19 at the Public Health Emergency Operations Center, says registration for voluntary testing began today.
For voluntary testing and the travelers, we will take 100 per day. We will never go beyond that because we don't want to also cause, again, accumulation of samples in the lab. We don't want also to delay the results of the other categories, like those who have symptoms and the follow-up.
For the past 5 months, the public health laboratory tested people displaying possible COVID-19 symptoms, as well as those planning to travel from Juba to other states. After a huge backlog in testing, Dr. Thorn says testing for travelers has now resumed.
So today, I think total number of around close to 25 people registered this morning. The category of these people, majority of the people are those who are traveling to the field to work, though some people going outside the country for further treatment to Kenya, to Uganda, to US, all these locations. Those who want to test voluntarily, I think around two people.
Dr. Tone says the numbers may be small because the word has not gotten out yet that testing has resumed at the Juba Health Science Institute across from Juba Teaching Hospital. As of July 18, South Sudan tested 12,487 samples, had 2,204 positive cases, and recorded 44 deaths. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Several people were killed and scores of others injured during intercommunal clashes in Sudan's western Darfur state over the weekend. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Local residents of El Janina say a policeman was killed by armed militia on Sunday evening while returning from his garden. They say the incident then took an ethnic dimension between the armed Arabs and local Masalit tribe. Speaking in Arabic to South Sudan in Focus from Al Janina, Abdul Mahmoud Hussein, who works for the local NGO charity and development organization, says five people were killed and several others injured when the town came under heavy gunfire last night.
The wounded individuals are currently in the hospital. Some of them are in the intensive care unit, and some are still in the outpatient department, while others have been taken to other wards for follow-up treatment.
Hussein says gunfire could still be heard this morning across Al Janina town. He says he saw a gunman open fire at a local graveyard where a burial was underway.
Before people could begin the burial, a group of Arabs came in a tinted Land Cruiser. They opened fire on the people at the burial site. The angry mourners attacked the car and set it on fire. Afterwards, they found that one person was burned inside the car.
The West Darfur government has deployed security forces to patrol the area, who have restricted movement of residents to avoid further retaliatory attack.
Now as we speak, everyone is indoors. Shopping centers and marketplaces are closed. There is a lot of tension in town, and it can escalate further any minute.
Speaking in Arabic by phone from Hujjat Kam in Al Janina, which hosts nearly 3,000 internally displaced families, IDP Muhammad Arbab says nearly 1,000 families who fled the fighting have arrived at the camp. Arbab says the new influx of IDPs are sheltering out in the open and are in need of food, medicines, and shelter.
The situation in West Darfur is so dire because it is the rainy season now, and more than 6 residential areas have been set on fire. They need shelter. You can imagine the situation of someone who has been farming this whole time, and now everything they owned has been burned down. Where can they get food, drinking water, or even shelter?
For the past month, a series of protests have been carried out in various parts of Darfur, where people are demanding improved security and that local militias be disarmed. 2 weeks ago, a delegation from Sudan's transitional government met with the local population of Nertiti town in central Darfur and agreed to form a joint security force to protect local residents and establish local courts to try suspected criminals. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
Borders between South Africa and Mozambique have been closed since March. This has created economic hardships for the families of an estimated 28,000 Mozambican miners. The miners have been unable to cross the border to work in South Africa and send remittance to support their families. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, Paul Dillon, tells VOA an agreement worked out between the two countries will allow migrants who are properly screened for the coronavirus to resume work in South Africa.
The screening is conducted by the hiring agency, and when they're screened as virus-free, they are then taken into South Africa and quarantined there by the hiring agency for 14 days.
Dillon says the first group of 500 miners has gone through the process and received health checks at an IOM-operated cross-border occupational health center. The center was originally set up to improve the early diagnosis and treatment of tuberculosis, a condition which disproportionately affects mine workers. The IOM spokesman says another 3,000 miners will be screened at the center in the coming weeks. South Africa is the country hardest hit by COVID-19 on the continent. The World Health Organization reports more than 337,500 people are infected with the coronavirus and more than 4,800 have died. This contrasts with only 1,400 reported cases in Mozambique, including 9 deaths. Dillon says IOM has decades of experience assisting its member states with a range of health and border management management issues. He says his agency hopes to use this expertise to create opportunities for Mozambicans with other skills to work in South Africa as well.
South Africa's gold and platinum mines alone employ roughly 45,000 migrant workers, and their skills are considered essential to the resumption of economic activity there. And it's hoped that thousands of migrant workers in Mozambique, including those in the agricultural sector with contracts in South Africa, will soon become part of the same process.
Dylan says IOM staff has been working with long-haul truckers at the Rosano Garcia and Machipanda border crossing since June on ways to protect themselves from COVID-19. He says they have provided nearly 7,500 truckers with prevention messages in local languages and given them practical tips for hand washing and physical distancing. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Ugandan authorities relocate some South Sudanese refugees to reduce tensions in a refugee camp. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what image do you think your country has internationally?
My country internationally has a very good image based on its level of security, the gender involvement of women in decision making, and its cleanliness.
Internationally, my country, we are seen as a hospitable country and very friendly, and you know, a strong country to us all.
It is good because, okay, in other areas like the tourism side of it, the security side of it, let me say like the locally, like these days we don't have like political instabilities in the country.
My country, at the moment, I think it has one of the poorest image because look at the taxes my country is imposing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is the message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The UN's refugee agency has been forced to relocate hundreds of South Sudanese refugees in a camp in Uganda to a safer location after violence broke out last week over food. Three South Sudanese teenagers were killed in ethnic clashes and seven others injured over accusations of stealing crops planted inside the camp. Halima Atumani reports for VOA from Kampala.
The violence was sparked by an incident July 13th in which youth from the Nuero community allegedly stole maize from the farm of the Kuku community in Palorinya, Obongi district, northern Uganda. Even though the perpetrators were punished, the situation escalated into violence. Three boys aged 16, 17 and 18 were killed, seven others were wounded, and some 280 shelters were set ablaze. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has relocated 762 South Sudanese refugees due to fear of retaliation attacks. 80% of these, according to the UNHCR, a children. Dunia Khan, the UNHCR Uganda spokesperson, tells VOA by phone that even though the tension has diminished, there is still a potential for more violence.
If 27% of the population do not see any hope and they don't have better chances of getting you know, secondary schooling education. Majority lack higher education and meaningful employment opportunities. Then they are very vulnerable to be engaged in, you know, subversive activities or negative coping mechanisms.
In April, the UN World Food Programme cut food rations in Uganda by 30%, which coincided with the coronavirus stay-at-home orders, which in turn affected those struggling to make ends meet, including refugees. The WFP warned that lack of food could force an already vulnerable group to resort to extreme methods to survive. Muse Chwero, Uganda's State Minister for Refugees, says it's unfortunate that these incidents keep happening, blaming it on South Sudan refugee leaders whom he says keep playing up tribal tensions. The Ugandan government has now resorted to using local radio stations in the community to promote peace.
Those sentiments continue to run very high among the Sudanese, unfortunately. So any small thing can trigger death. This is not the first time. One of the costs that we bear is to look after them and deploy a police force which is trained in human rights to make sure that apart from just enforcing law and order among these groups, they also are teachers and teach them how they must live among themselves.
Uganda hosts more than 1.4 million refugees, with South Sudanese nationals making up about two-thirds of the refugee population. The World Food Programme warns that the refugees will face further cuts in food rations unless the international community steps up and supplies the necessary funding. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
A spokesperson for Tanzania's ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party says President John Pombe Magufuli deserves another term in office, his second and perhaps the last. The party nominated President Magufuli on July 11 for another five-year term in the coming October elections. Opposition parties are holding their own primaries and talking about a possible alliance to choose a single candidate. Human rights groups, including the U.S. State Department, say there is lack of freedom of press and political association in Tanzania. However, CCM spokesman Humphrey Polepole says the allegations are fictitious. He says President Magufuli undertook several development projects during his 5 years in office and plans to do more in his second term.
For the last 5 years, huge developmental initiatives have been taken in Tanzania by the leadership of Chama cha Mapinduzi under Comrade John Pombe Joseph Magufuli. If I am to mention a few, primary and secondary education has moved from not free education to free education. The last 5 years, Comrade Magufuli has managed to build health facilities in Tanzania. From when he took office back in 2015, there were about 77 district hospitals in Tanzania since independence, but Comrade Magufuli has managed his administration to build new 71 district hospitals and about 40 other municipal district hospitals are under construction as we speak.
The party says that it will create 8 million jobs if elected for the next 5 years. Where would these 8 million jobs come from?
You know, for the last 5 years, one thing that we've experienced is we've invested so much in the huge infrastructure development. So that involves a lot of construction in the country. And in the next 5 years, our plan is to even boost the infrastructure development in the country by building more roads, building more factories. We're building dams to produce hydroelectric power. So the construction industry in Tanzania is on the boom.
Your government has been criticized a lot by the Tanzania opposition and human rights groups for lack of freedom of assembly and press. Your response?
First of all, here in Tanzania, we are open to constructive criticism all the time, and we've made that point very clear. What you are saying as criticism on the freedom of assembly and press is fictitious and does not represent the reality here in Tanzania. Second of all, I would like to make this very clear that freedom of movement, freedom of expression, freedom of association, these are constitutional provisions, and I would like to make this very clear that Section 17, Section 18, and Section 20 of the Tanzanian Constitution grant those rights to Tanzanians. And as a ruling governing party, Chama cha Mapinduzi has a responsibility of making sure that the government delivers those rights offered by the Constitution always to our people.
That's Humphrey Polepole, spokesperson for Tanzania's ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi's party. He was speaking with my colleague James Batty from the capital, Dodoma. And here in the United States, the birthplace of democracy, protests continue and the number of people infected with the coronavirus continues to increase. President Trump has seen his popularity erode while support builds for his rival presumed Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. President Trump, in an interview aired Sunday by Fox News, said he would not commit to accepting results of the upcoming presidential elections in November. Trump contends that a series of polls that show him losing popularity compared to Biden are faulty. He believes Republican voters are underrepresented in such surveys. For more on Trump's refusal to commit to accepting election results, VOA's Jason Patankin spoke with constitutional law professor Joel Richard Paul from the University of California, Hastings in San Francisco.
As protests continue and as the coronavirus outbreak worsens in the U.S., President Trump has seen his popularity erode, while support builds for his rival, presumed Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. But President Trump, in an interview aired Sunday by Fox News, said he would not commit to accepting the results of the upcoming presidential election in November.
You don't know until you see. It depends. I think mail-in voting is going to rig the election. I really do.
Fox journalist Chris Wallace pressed Trump for an answer.
Can you give a direct answer? You will accept the election?
I have to see. I have to see. No, I'm not going to just say yes. I'm not going to say no, and I didn't last time either.
Biden responded to Trump's comments saying, quote, "The American people will decide this election, and the United States government is perfectly capable of escorting trespassers out of the White House," end quote. In 2016, Trump also refused to say whether he would accept election results. At that time, opinion polls showed he was far behind Democrat candidate Hillary Clinton. Trump contends that a series of polls that today show him losing popularity compared to Biden are faulty. He believes Republican voters are underrepresented in such surveys.
First of all, I'm not losing because those are fake polls. They were fake in 2016, and now they're even more fake. The polls were much worse in 2016.
For more on Trump's refusal to commit to accepting election results, I spoke with constitutional law professor Joel Richard Paul from the University of California, Hastings in San Francisco.
This is another example of the president not following the norms of his office. But the fact is that the president doesn't have to accept the results. The Constitution doesn't particularly care if a loser accepts the results or not. The results are determined by the Electoral College, and so long as the Electoral College votes, that will determine who the next president will be.
So if Trump does reject the Electoral College results, what can he do?
Yeah, well, I think that if the president believed that there were false ballots counted, or if he thought that the ballots had not been counted appropriately, he can certainly ask for a state recount. That's what happened in 2000 when Vice President Gore asked for a recount in the state of Florida. And the states are prepared to conduct those kinds of recounts. The president's objection seems to be that he thinks that voting by mail is fraudulent. And that's simply not true. The president himself votes by mail. The military for decades has voted by mail, and voting by mail generally is considered by most election experts to be safer than voting in person because you have tracking numbers, you have to sign your ballot, your signature can be checked against the signature on record, And so voting by mail actually creates a paper trail, which makes it easier to conduct a recount. Those are the only remedies that would be available to the president if he objected to the result. Now, I suppose there's always the possibility that the president could simply decide that he's not going to leave office and try by force of arms to stay in power. But our military is sworn to uphold the Constitution, and I'm pretty confident that the culture of the military is such that they would do so. There is also the risk, of course, the president has developed what looks increasingly like a kind of personal guard in the Department of Justice and in the Department of Homeland Security. And I suppose he could try to rally those people. Ultimately, what will really happen here is that if the president tried some unconstitutional attempt to seize power, to maintain power, it would be up to the Congress of the United States to act. And I guess then it really depends on whether the Republicans maintain their majority in the Senate or not. I guess there's always the risk that the Republicans, if they had the majority in the Senate, could choose not to act to remove the president. Unfortunately, there have been relatively few Republicans who have been willing to speak out when the president has acted in a way that's not consistent with the norms of his office. But assuming they don't hold a majority in the Senate, then I would imagine if the Democrats were in charge of both houses, that the president would not really have any leg to stand on.
Now, Trump's comments come as he's falling behind in the polls. He's called them fake polls. What do you make of these polls?
Well, first of all, I think that we should all remember that the polls 4 years ago showed that Hillary Clinton was going to win in a walk. So I don't think anyone should take a great deal of comfort or worry too much about what the polls are saying now. It's still 100 days to the election, and that's really a lifetime in politics. But I guess if you're President Trump and you don't like to lose, one way to avoid losing would be to step aside and to decide not to seek re-election and allow his vice president to run instead, which has happened in the past and could happen again.
That's Professor Joel Richard Paul, a constitutional law professor from the University of California, Hastings in San Francisco. He was speaking with my colleague Jason Patankin. That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Jere Jere by Dynamic.
All right, Sudanese child. ooh yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh yeah, Ruka music. Auma. Jere jere bidunia de.
Jere jere.
Sibuna si zambala.
Jere jere.
Suwata ta dunia de.
Suwata, suwata.
Nasi mutu zambala.
Suwata.
Sunubatal fi dunia de mama.
Sunubata.
Nasi maderu geni sawa.
Sunubata.
Wenu salam takulio.
Wenu salam.
Nasi maderu geni sawa.
Wenu salam.
Jiran bada mashaki.
Jiran bada mashaki.
Asana nami lotuko.
Lotuko, lotuko, yeah.
Do you fabaja fibe?
Fibe, fibe.
Asana nami lokoya.
Lokoya, lokoya, ya.
Tere, tere, bidunia de.
Tere, tere.
We've been listening to Dynamic with the song Jere Jere. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for corona. Join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Uganda,
Tugende Kampala,
Jirana Bafataba,
Kuflu,
Yeye,
Kuflu,
Asana Namindidinga,
Madi Mundari Kuku,
Durujuwa Namin Shukur,
Durujuwa Namin Shukur.
Asana na minuba Ari acheye Jere jere fidunia de
Jere jere
Sibuna si sambala
Jere jere
Suatata dunia de